You're with Clement Magnatella.
702. But right now, we start our conversation with the Minister of Home Affairs, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, who joins us in studio this morning. Minister, thank you so much for making time for us.
Yeah, good morning, Clement. Good morning to the listeners on there. And thank you very much for having me. I must warn, I've got the flu.
I was about to
My
ask.
Voice is not very stable. Yes.
You are such a committed public servant.
Thank you.
Others could be in their warm blankets this morning recovering. And you are here, so I appreciate that. Thank you for making time.
Thank you very much.
I want to start off with something that I saw in the news that I'm sure disturbed you. Certainly disturbed you, but disturbed other people as well. The death threats that you have been receiving. What's going on? Why are you wanted dead?
Well, I wasn't told. I just thought maybe it goes with the job. Because some of the decisions that we take do affect people in one or the other. And some may not be liking it. That's why all the ministers working in the JCPS cluster, Justice, Crime Prevention and Security cluster, have to have some form of additional security because of the decisions we take. I suspect so.
Yeah. So this person has been, is it someone who's contacted you and told you that I've been hired to take you out?
Yes.
And when you asked him why, what did he say?
Well, he wouldn't give reasons. All he was saying, he was bidding. He said, I've been asked to take you out, but if you pay more than them, then I'll turn the tables and take them out rather than you, which is nonsense because if I do that, you'll just come back again. Yeah, so I said, no, to hell.
Is this matter being taken seriously?
Oh,
are
yes.
The police investigating?
Oh, yes. I immediately conducted the hawks, and two officers came and sat with me and they took statements.
Okay. Let's start now with. I want us to start with the white paper on citizenship, immigration and refugee protection. That's now been approved by cabinet. How far is this going? Because it's overhauling, so to speak, some of our immigration laws. How far is this going in dealing with what really has, some have argued, been an immigration crisis in the country?
Look, it has been passed by cabinet on the 10th of April and gazetted on the 17th of April, meaning it is now policy of the country. What we are busy with now is to draft a bill in line. Remember, a white paper is just a policy foundation. It's a foundation on which the future laws must be based. So we are now starting to draft a bill because the proposals in the white paper are far-reaching and radical. As we have said, we said we must totally repeal the Citizenship Act that was passed in 1995, the Refugee Protection Act that was passed in 1998, and the Immigration Act that was passed in 2002. They must all be repealed in their entirety. And we start afresh with a new bill, which is an omnibus bill. I also forgot, we also need to have a re-look at the BMA Act, which has just been, you know, it's not a very old act. The BMA has just been established. But we need to infuse BMA also in
That's
immigration.
The Border Management Authority.
The Border Management Authority, yes. I'm sorry to use the abbreviation, yes. BMA is Border Management Authority. Its act will also have to be re-looked into in line with immigration laws.
Okay. I want the listeners to understand, because part of what has been recommended was that there must be a withdrawal from that 1951 convention. What rights did that provide for refugees who are legally here in the country?
Look, and I think this needs to be understood because some people are trying to distort it. You need to understand the history of it. The 1951 convention was drawn by the United Nations 3 years after its inception, after the inception of the United Nations, because they realized that after the Second World War, which ended in 1945, there were problems of people scattered all over, running away from the war. And now the war is over, some want to come back, and others are being impeded. You know, it was a sort of some little bit chaotic. Mm-hmm. And they said, can we sit down and draw the rules under which people are can leave their countries without any document and enter another person's country without those documents? What are the applicable rules? How mm-hmm. do we regulate it? That's when then they come up with the 1951 convention, which mentions that you can run to another country, which is a signatory to the convention, of course.
Yeah.
It has to be a signatory if there is war in your country,
mm-hmm.
like it's happening now in Gaza and Ukraine. If anybody comes from there and say, I want refugee status in your country, they qualify in terms of that convention.
Mm.
Secondly, if there's a natural disaster, like fires, earthquakes, volcanoes, and all that, you can also run. Thirdly, and most commonly, if you are being persecuted in your country, and there are four types of persecutions that are identified: political persecution, religious persecution,
mm.
traditional for your traditional beliefs, and even for your sexual orientation.
Mm.
You know, many countries now, all on the continent, is now a talk of the town
mm.
about this issue of sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
When those exist, you can then run to another country. Now, that was the convention in 1951. It provides for that. But then the United Nations knew it, Clement, because that convention has got 46 articles regulating this area.
Mm-hmm.
Article about this, about that type, you know, of situation, etc., etc. Then the United Nations itself was worried, even at that time, what will happen if a country wants to sign this convention? But there's an article there that is not suitable for them.
Mm.
Not because they don't want to help,
yeah.
but maybe they are even unable to. Maybe it's an article that wants economic, serious economic benefits, which the country can't give.
Yeah.
Serious economic commitment or social commitment or political, social, economic commitments. What will happen if a country say, look, I want to sign this, but that article
yeah.
is going to cause me a problem. Does this, the country then not become part of the whole convention
yeah.
because of that? So they introduced, out of the 46 articles, they introduced Article 42, which allows, it's a leeway for country to say, I'm signing in for this, I'm acceding to it, my parliament is ratifying it.
Okay.
But this particular article is out for us.
Which one was that?
No. They choose whichever.
I'm you just can saying, choose whichever out
article
of the 47.
Article 42
yeah.
provides for that.
Okay.
That if there's an article that offends you, you don't have to drop the whole convention.
Okay.
You take that article as a reservation.
Okay.
And say, I'm part of this article, but this, some many countries actually say, we regard this article as just a recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
We have got no obligation to it. They are yeah. not saying we won't do it. They are saying, but we are not legally obliged
to do
because we are yeah because we are put it as a reservation.
What articles do we have issues with?
Yeah, no. Let me go on.
Mm.
So, the problem with us when we entered, remember in 1951, we could not be part of any international
yes,
because
yes.
of apartheid.
Mm.
But after liberation, after 1994, we then entered the convention on the 1st of December, 1996. The problem with us is that we never looked at all the articles and look at the ones that are problematic. We signed
you just signed.
Stock and barrel. Yes.
Yeah.
That's the mistake that happened. And now we are trying to correct that because many countries are doing what they can, but they've put in reservations where they believe it might be problematic for them. By not putting reservation, Clement, let me tell you what it means. Because people are saying, no, it means we are throwing away human rights. No. It means you are telling the world that come here, anything you want, which is provided for in the convention, you'll get. That convention was drawn for hundreds of countries around the world. Some can do one thing and not be able to do the other.
Mm.
But in our case, we are saying anything that is in the convention, it goes with us, we'll provide, which is not necessarily true, by the way. It's not necessarily true. There's no country on earth that has got that type of capacity.
Okay.
But we signed as if we do have.
All right. I want to raise two challenges with what the 1951 convention says. So, for instance, socioeconomic rights of asylum seekers and refugees. When they come here, according to what we have signed, they are entitled to socioeconomic rights. Is that correct?
Yes, it is correct.
But do we have the resources as the South African government to
respond
to that?
That's precisely my point. That's the point I'm making to you. That we behaved as if any type of resource that is needed will be able to provide. For instance, if you look, let me give the simplest country which you'll relate to, Zambia, where most liberation movements in Africa, in Southern Africa went to when they were fighting for liberation. They took a reservation on Article 22.1, which is about elementary education. It doesn't mean refugees and asylum seekers are not going to school in Zambia. It doesn't mean that. But all they are saying is that it's not their obligation. They will do it if they are unable to. If they are unable to do it, nobody can take them to court and say they've breached an agreement. That's basically what it means. But it does not mean that they are not giving those rights.
Yeah.
So and that's why I'm rejecting the notion that no, we want to take rights away. No, we are just saying the areas which are impossible for us.
Yes.
To provide.
We will provide.
Let me give you a question of housing. Is South Africa capable of giving anybody a house who comes from any part of the world?
No.
And come and stay here.
Our own people, some have been waiting since 1995 for RDP houses.
That is the point about the reservations. You are showing areas that are easy for you and areas that are very difficult or outright impossible.
So there's something else and that often happens, and maybe that's the abuse of, or people are taking advantage of that 1951 convention, where asylum seekers will pass many countries until they arrive to South Africa and they want to apply for asylum here when they've passed other countries where they could have applied for asylum. Was there no reservation, or is there no reservation for us where in ratifying this, we are able to protect ourselves from that?
Unfortunately, it does not exist. In both the 1951 convention, the 1967 protocol, and even in the OAU, Organization of African Unity Convention of 1969, it doesn't exist. Generally, it is colloquially called first safe country. If the convention says you can run away from your country because there is war, or there's a natural disaster, or you are being persecuted, the first safest country where such things don't exist, surely you must apply for asylum. But in practice, that is not what's happening. People choose and pick. And they usually choose a country where they believe is well-to-do, rather than is safe, or if you understand what I mean. Now, this matter, Clement, was raised by a country, I think it's Hungary. Yes. In October last year, at the executive board meeting. Executive board meeting is the meeting under United Nations Convention. United Nations High Commissioner for Refugee, where ministers who deal with immigration all over the world meet once every year. Hungary raised it and said, please clarify this point of first country principle. They were told, it was their Minister of Foreign Affairs who raised it. They were told that there is no such a principle internationally. But we went to check, it's not necessarily true. Some countries put it in their law, even if it's not in the convention.
Ah.
So we put it in the white paper. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees panicked because they've already said in a meeting of all ministers dealing with immigration that it does not exist. And we checked legally, we found that we can indeed put it in our law.
Because other countries have done that.
Yes. So they came, they visited to come and debate the issue. And they never said, don't do it. They said, let's give you an alternative. And I said, what's the alternative? They said, let's look at the route-based approach. Then I said, what is a route-based approach? They said, we look at the route which people take when they come into South Africa and see if we can talk to the countries through which they've passed. I said, but to me, it's the same thing. It's the first safe country principle. Yes. By the way, it was also raised in Parliament in the Portfolio Committee. Why is it not happening? During that time when the people who were in the Central Methodist Church from the DRC, when they caused havoc, members of political parties were upset. All political parties, they sent their chief whips to a meeting to hear what's going on. And one of the parties raised this and said, but why should people pass so many countries? You'll also remember what happened with the Afghans who were running away from the Taliban.
Mm.
America tell the world that will fix the Taliban. They go there and
occupy. 20 years.
Yeah, for 20 years. When they realize they can't do it,
they exit.
They just run away. Mm. And then you find a group of people come in there. They go to Pakistan. Then they go to Qatar. Then they go to Zimbabwe, then Zambia. All of those countries, they just go past. But when they come to South Africa, they say, we are now applying for asylum. We now applying for asylum because you are lost, blah, blah, blah. And now I ask questions about that. And guess what, Clement? I found that some of the laws that were passed, especially the Refugee Act in 1998, does allow for that type of a thing.
Mm.
And that's why we want to repeal and and redo them, because some of the things Parliament did not foresee that something like this will happen.
Yeah, it's 25 minutes after 10 o'clock. We'll continue this chat with the Minister of Home Affairs, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi.
702,
the Clement Maniatela Show.
Let's walk the talk.
It's 28 minutes after 10 o'clock. We're in conversation with the Home Affairs Minister, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi. And Minister, you were talking about people passing other countries to come here because also our legislation allowed for it, but that's why now you're repealing it. Isn't part of the reason that people look at us and think, they've got weaknesses in their immigration laws, that's the perfect country to go to?
Well, indeed it is. If you remember one of your radio stations, because I know you're competing, let's not name them on your radio station.
We don't compete. We're number one Gauteng talk radio station.
Okay, so that's according to you. But let me not cause trouble and mention another radio on your station. I once did so.
Yeah.
And I was,
and you were reprimanded.
Yes. Okay. So I'm not about to repeat it.
All right.
One of the radio stations asked the lawyer representing those people from Afghanistan. He said, but you went to Pakistan, Qatar, Zimbabwe, Zambia. But when you come to South Africa, you now apply for refugee. Why is that? He said, no, we studied the laws of all these countries and realized that the easiest country to enter is South Africa due to its laws. Now, some people take it that is an accolade. But I'm working Home Affairs. I know it's not an accolade. It's quite trouble because it shows, as you say, weaknesses in some legislation. Remember this, Clement. When did we do all this legislation? The Citizenship Act was in 1995, 1 year after democracy.
Mm.
We're just coming in as a government. And at that time, there was a hurry to have a Citizenship Act. Mm. There was a hurry. What was the hurry all about? Some blacks who were South Africans were not really South Africans. Blacks in the TPV states of Transkei, Ciskei, Bophuthatswana, and all that. You remember the story of Lucas Mangope just before the elections, who said Bophuthatswana is not going to be part of it. So there was a hurry to make sure that we have got one Citizenship Act to make people citizens.
Okay.
And during that process, obviously, mistakes will be made, if you understand what I mean.
Mm.
Then come to Refugee Act passed in 1999. Who was our president? Madiba. Because of his influence, the whole world was changing, including in areas of the world where there used to be dictators. There was now democracy. People are now having periodic elections, which they never used to have.
Mm.
People who used to rule forever as dictators were now changing. Countries that never used to have constitutions were now having constitution and say, you can only rule for two terms and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So the situation was promising. There were winds of change. And our Refugee Act was made under that. In other words, with no threat of somebody going to misuse or abuse or all that, because the whole world looked peaceful.
But after we saw the abuse of our immigration laws, because they also their weaknesses also poses a security risk for this country and the people of this country. After we've seen that, my assessment is that government has taken too long to put in laws that are strong enough. Is that not fair?
Well, it is fair if you look, for instance, at the issue of borders, where look, Madiba came in, found electric fences, soldiers every meter with guns facing our neighboring countries and all that. And South Africa, remember, was not having any relationship with our neighbors. Then Madiba said, look, we are a democracy, there's no more war. We are the last country to get liberated. So why do we have all these things? And they were removed. But the mistake that happened, they were not replaced with anything that is appropriate for democracy. Now, NICOC, the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee, that is the structure that coordinates intelligence services. The crime intelligence from police, military intelligence from the army, civilian intelligence, I mean security intelligence from state security, which may even happen to civilians, I mean to say, and the FIC, the Financial Intelligence Center. There is a body that coordinates them called NICOC. They do what is called intelligence estimate. Let's estimate the security risk of the country. As far back as 2009, they picked up this problem at the borders and say, no, man, there's a problem here at the borders, you know, this porousness and all that. Then they recommended that a special structure whose job is only the borders, because the police and the army have got other jobs, be established. It took 12 years for that act to pass through parliament because of difference. So I do agree with you that it took time, 12 full years, because there were some differences in approach which I don't really have to mention here. Yeah. Well, so only after 12 years, they established the BMA. It has started now. Mm-hmm. People are now saying, no, it's doing nothing and all that. Mm. It's still a new baby and it has already done a lot.
And I'll give you a
18
chance.
Months of experience.
I'll give you an opportunity to talk more about that after the headlines. I just want to quickly take the latest in Eyewitness News headlines.
702.
The Clement Manya Taylor Show.
Let's walk the talk.
It's 23 minutes before 11 o'clock. We are having a conversation this morning with the Home Affairs Minister, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi. I see your WhatsApps coming through. I'll get to them in a moment. Your calls as well on 011-883-0702. Minister, I wanted to give you an opportunity quickly to tell us more about the Border Management Authority, because that's what our hope was built on. And you're saying some people are saying that that's not doing a lot of work, and you're saying it's still a new baby. What is it failing to do? What is it succeeding at?
Well, it is a new baby because the first cohort of border guards were only 200 established on the 14th of July, 2022. It's only now, later this month, that we are going to inaugurate the second cohort of border guards. The first group of border guards, because we had to establish border guards, we took them as reservists from the army police, which means they already knew something about security. Mm. The second cohort, we said, let's go down to the villages and make them part of this and choose people from there who have never had any security training and start training them from the scratch, how to shoot, you know, all the things that happen in security. Mm. Now they've just qualified. We are now going to inaugurate them, I think in the next 2 weeks or so. So we'll be having 600 border guards rather than the 200 that they've been working all the time. But even for the past 18 months with 200 border guards, you saw two Sundays ago when the commissioner was giving a report that they've been able to stop 281,000 people from entering the country illegally or irregularly. Mm-hmm. They have stopped up to 160 cars which were stolen and were about to cross the border. They have stopped many other counterfeit goods, and, you know, people who were crossing the border with goods which were not supposed to cross the border. They actually stopped that, which means work has innately started. Yeah. Where people say we are failing is because somehow people believe once we have got border guards or we've got border management authority, the borders will be sealed in such a way that not even air can pass through. And they get angry when I tell them this, Clement. There's no border anywhere in the world that may not be breached. If that was the case, freedom fighters from all liberation movements in South Africa would not have gone through the fortified borders of the apartheid state. But they used to go there. Some of us participated in making them cross even with the army, soldiers, electric fence, people still breach a border. So the Border Management Authority is trying its best, but we are strengthening it. As I'm speaking now, we have ordered for them 18 drones for them to surveil the borders. We have ordered them 4-speed boats to be able to run around the rivers where people just cross. We have bought them a handheld gadget, which when you put your finger there, can immediately through a fingerprint determine who you are and where you know.
I suppose we live in a country, Minister, where for the longest time it was a free-for-all. I mean, by the time you are implementing and establishing the Border Management Authority, so many people have come in and they don't even have the right papers to be here. Do we have the exact number of foreigners who are here illegally?
Well, I don't know. I've answered that question so many times. And it looks like Clement, you people in the media are refusing to accept it. A person who comes here illegally doesn't want to be known because they are illegal. We have established very clear channels, Clement. And our laws, even the laws that we are going to repeal and start afresh, they state that Section 23 of the Immigration Act says if a person arrives at the border and say, I'm running into a country, I want to be an asylum seeker, refugee, these are my reasons, etc. We allow them in and we give them what you call a Section 23 permit. It says you are allowed into South Africa without any document, illegal as you are, provided that you will arrive at the nearest refugee reception center and announce your presence there. We have got 5 refugee reception centers. One is in Musina. The biggest one is here in Marabastad, called Desmond Tutu, named after the Archbishop. Desmond Tutu Refugee Reception Center.
Yeah.
We've got one in Cape Town, one in Gqeberha, and one in Itekwini. When you arrive there immediately, whether the story you are saying is true or not is immaterial. They give you a Section 22 permit, now under the Refugee Act, which says you are here, we are welcoming you, you are going to apply to be a bona fide refugee. We are still going to determine whether you qualify or not, but this document allows you to be here for a period of 3 to 6 months, and it's renewable. Once you win, in other words, your stories match with the international convention and our own domestic law, then you are given a Section 24 permit. You are under international protection. The other way of coming to South Africa is via a visa, and we have got 17 of them. Study visa, tourist visa, business visa, etc. If you are not on any one of those, then you are illegal. And we won't know about your presence because you deliberately did not want to present yourself to areas where you should present yourself.
And the police do you not have the numbers of people who are here illegally that have been arrested, that have been deported or taken through the criminal justice system?
Well, those we have, once we arrest you, we know that we deport between 15 and 20,000 people every year. Those are the ones who have been illegal.
Isn't that number low?
What?
20,000 people every year.
Yes, yes. Those are the ones we catch. But also remember, it also, according to the budget, the resources we have, if you have got 100,000 people, Clement, who you catch, you, in terms of the law, you have to deport them using your own resources. Those who come from as far as Ethiopia and DRC, you have got to hire a chartered flight. So we work within the budget and the numbers that we could carry. That's why, Clement, the solution to this is not what you're thinking. I can see you thinking that we must increase the number of people deported. Our solution, which is the mainstay, is to make sure that the Border Management Authority is strengthened. That's why we're buying them drones and all that, because then you don't have to deport anybody if you don't allow so many people to come in.
All right, let's take some calls. I'm going to ask you to put on those headphones, Minister. I'm going to start with Mamiki, who's calling us from Pretoria. Quickly, Mamiki, good morning.
Hi, morning, Clement.
Sure, go ahead.
I'd like to ask the Minister, before he was Minister of Health, and I just want to find out, because he was aware of the impact of these foreigners in the health system. And I was wondering, did at any time talk to his government, his counterpart, then the former Minister of Foreign Affairs, because the situation is even worse now than when he was the Minister of Health.
So you're talking about the overburdening of the health system by the illegal foreigners.
I said what I'm asking now is that at that time when he was the Minister of Health, before he became now the Minister of Home Affairs, he knew about the overburden of this foreign national on the healthcare system.
Okay.
And what did he do then?
Okay, got you. Mamiki in Pretoria, thank you, Minister.
Actually, Clement, if Mamiki was following the news, she will realize that I spoke about this openly and proposed. It was in a Nehau conference, which was held in Bramfontein, where I made a statement about this and said we have to relook at our immigration laws. Do you know what happened? I was branded xenophobic and attacked all over. There was an article even written by one professor who called me a Nazi for bringing that to the attention of people, because I was saying we have got a situation where we can no longer even cope with what we are faced with. But after that, Premier Makhura, former Premier of Gauteng Makhura, did make a proposal of the possibility sending invoices to the countries where the people come from. And of course, the country said, no, we never sent anybody to your country. Mm-hmm. You know, they come on their own, so we can't be paying. So I did say something about it and branded all sorts of names. But I'm continuing to look at the weaknesses within the system and correcting them without fear, favor, or prejudice.
Hemen Mashaba, also calling us on the line. Mr. Mashaba, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Clement, and good morning to the minister. Clement, obviously, listening to the minister, I think I just need to understand from the minister, when did he actually ever realize that South Africa is sitting with a massive illegal foreigners? Because 1st of December 2016, when I was the mayor of the city of Johannesburg, his minister then of Home Affairs and the entire ANC, including Premier Makhura at the time, went all out unleashing onslaught insults against me, calling me xenophobic. On the 22nd of October 2019, I presented to Parliament. Minister Motsoaledi was already the minister himself at the time, managed to get and his department to come and defend their stance and calling me the xenophobic in Parliament. So what I want to know, Minister, when did you change your stance to realize that these laws are not in line with our country, they are compromising our sovereignty as a country?
Emin Mashaba, thank you so much for calling us. Minister?
Emin Mashaba must tell the truth. He must really tell the truth, because nobody called him xenophobic. What happened is that he announced that he's resigning as a mayor of Gauteng on a particular date. But before he resigned, he took me to court. Sorry, not to court, I apologize. He took me to Parliament, to the Joint Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs and COGTA, local government, and complained that houses are being hijacked in the center of Joburg, and the Minister of Home Affairs is doing nothing about it. And he complained bitterly that Parliament must sanction me and force me to do something about hijacked houses. The answer we gave him was not that he's xenophobic. I said, any person who hijacks a building is a criminal, and he needs to be dealt with criminally. Whether he's a foreigner or a South African, hijacking is a criminal offense. They need to be taken to police. And when you discover during the arrest of these criminals that actually some of them are undocumented, they are illegal, then you hand them over to Home Affairs. Traffic officials do that all the time. They arrest people for traffic offenses and discover that they are illegal, they hand them over to us. But they don't make noise and say Home Affairs must go and do traffic work because there are foreigners who break traffic laws. That is what I told Ntate Mashaba. I never said he's xenophobic. I just said he's asking me a job that is his as a mayor.
Okay.
He has got the right to call police and take out people from the buildings. And I'm still saying so.
Mm.
It's not the job of Home Affairs to remove people who have hijacked buildings. But it's our job, once it's discovered that they've got no documents, to take them to Lindela and deport them.
All right, it's 9 minutes before 11 o'clock. After the break, I want us to touch on some other issues, including the corruption in the system, the issue of spaza shops, that some of which are owned by foreign nationals as well. It's 9 minutes before 11.
Let's walk the talk.
This is Clemens Manyathela
on 702.
8 minutes before 11 o'clock, we're wrapping up our chat with the Minister of Home Affairs, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi. Minister, I want to take some few questions. I hope we can be quick, because there's lots of them. Who's this? Mandisa Centurion says, Clement, ask the minister, why is he so vocal about African immigrants, but Europeans and Americans are living carefree in Cape Town under the guise of being digital nomads? They leave South Africa every 3 months to Lesotho, Eswatini, in Namibia, and then come back, to the extent that property prices are rising and are pushed up. Why is he being selective about how he deems and what he deems as legitimate immigrants?
That's not true. That is not true at all. The law doesn't choose. If you are illegal, it doesn't matter on your color. You may remember the lady from Russia, which is a European country, by the way, who came here. There was a big party.
To a party.
Yes.
Yeah.
You remember what you did to her?
Yeah.
Yes. It's because we caught her. Anybody we catch, it does not depend on color. We act, and we act very harshly. If they come to the department, we'll show them a list of ways to which we did that.
Mm.
Part of the reason why they don't know about, people don't know about this claimant, is because they are concentrating at the borders where people cross on foot. And that happens to neighboring countries which happen to be Africans. People from Europe, when they come here illegally, they fly in. And some of them, we catch them right at the airport and return them at the expense of the airline and charge the airline 15,000 rand for every person they bring illegally. That's why I went out in the public and said, people are concentrating on lizards. I used that as an analogy. When crocodiles are there, and I describe crocodiles as people who come here, look decent, they are wearing suits, a briefcase full of money and all that, they are corrupting our system. Those we are dealing with, but those at the borders who cross openly, they are seen, like what was done by Gaetan McKenzie. It was shown all over TV and all that the borders are open, everybody's crossing. What about the airports? What about the seaports? We are working there, and we are stopping shenanigans, which members don't see. So I reject fully the fact that when we talk about illegal people, we are talking only about Africans and not whites and other people. It's not true.
How extensive?
And the issue of digital nomads. Is something that is still a proposal. What, that we must, you know, this to this remote work visa or digital nomads. Why is she talking about it that as if it's already happening? It's still a proposal which is being debated.
Mm-hmm. So this, I want to ask about the corruption in the system. How extensive is that? Because even the white paper does talk about the visa and permanent residence system that can also be abused, always being abused, at times with the collusion of officials from the Department of Home Affairs. If I'm not mistaken, I think the president has signed a proclamation for the SIU to investigate maladministration and corruption, the issuing of permits and visas by department officials. How extensive is corruption in the department?
We asked him, actually. We asked the president to sign because we wanted SIU to come in. We are the only government department, Clement, that has got a whole DDG responsible for counter-corruption. There's no other government department that have such a thing. They do have a director of risk management, maybe a chief director, but we have a whole deputy director general with a whole branch just to concentrate on corruption because it's very prevalent. You may remember, Clement, that the gentleman called Prophet Bushiri, Pastor Bushiri, defrauded our document, permanent residence document, and he took it to defraud his own congregation for 102 million. The Hawks arrested him, and we caught the people who gave him this document, and we fired them, about five senior people who were responsible for that. But then I received a petition from the people who give permits, who are saying that lady, the DDG for counter corruption, happens to be a lady. She's an advocate who was once a police woman, so she understands these things. And she was catching them. And they wrote a petition to me that she must stop investigating their errors. And I got scared by that sentence. Somebody working for Home Affairs and say, I'm committing errors, don't investigate them. Are they really errors? So I put up a team that was chaired by a former DG in the presidency, Dr. Quisias Lubisi, who was held by the people who used to work for the Scorpions, and even people who used to investigate for the Zondo Commission. It has just finished its work, so they were free. They made an investigation and gave a report, which we submitted to Parliament, by the way, about the findings. And their recommendation was that we need to put a multidisciplinary team of forensic investigators, auditors, data analysts, etc. They are busy at work, as I'm talking, and they've given a report last month to Parliament about the progress. But we said, let's bring the SIU, because you know what? SIU have got more success and a power to retract or get back what we have been taken in the form of property and money, because some of those things, we want them back. And that's where I mentioned the issue of crocodiles, because it's rich people who do such things.
Okay. Minister, I'm going to take the news now. I don't know if it's possible after the news to keep you for another 5-6 minutes.
You can is keep that me possible? Whatever is possible.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Maybe
very
15.
Much.
I know I'll get late somewhere, but this is important.
Okay, it's a minute before 11. We started a conversation in the last hour with the Minister of Home Affairs, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi. I've asked him to stay a couple of more minutes so that we can just wrap up the conversation, and then we'll get into our World of Work feature. And Minister, thank you for agreeing to stay on for a couple of more minutes. The issue of spaza shops. Because that's another issue that's been raised by listeners here. Are they going to be audited, and why has government failed to audit spaza shops? Because there are many of them that are operating without the necessary licenses, and some of the people who are operating these spaza shops don't even have the right papers to be here.
Yeah, Clement, you may remember that I called a two-day workshop of all the district mayors, and 36 came out of 54, which is a good attendance. Of all the metro mayors, and 6 came out of 8. And of all the houses of traditional leaders, 7 houses, because Gauteng and Western Cape have got no house of traditional leaders. And I also called SALGA, South African Local Government Association, and called 4 of my colleagues, Housing, COGTA, Small Business, even DTI. We spent 2 days at Biju debating this issue of spaza shops, because some of it has to do with bylaws, which, by the way, are not in Home Affairs. The issue of rezoning, for instance, for business, it's a municipal issue. So we're discussing who has to do what. And we took a resolution, rather resolutions, one of them, that each mayor must do the audit of their spaza shops in their area, because it's their job to do so. They must audit them, write addresses and everything. 2, that the Minister of COGTA must develop a series of bylaws which are common, which will be applied by all municipalities. She's in a process of doing so. We have given input. 3, that all traditional leaders, because they've also lodged complaints, must have a list, a register of all the foreign nationals who came in their area. You have got lots of Pakistani and Bangladeshi nationals who have settled in rural areas and started establishing spaza shops there and all that. We want their register. Once that happened, we want each and every spaza shop to be registered. And it's not Home Affairs which registered businesses. They will have to be registered by municipalities, but they will get guidance from the Minister of COGTA. Once they register them, you want documentation. Whether it's a South African spaza shop or owned by a foreign, there must be documents. Those who will be found to have no documents, then the spaza shop will be closed. Those which have got documents, then will register them, and also register them for tax, for SARS. They'll have to pay tax. And then the Department of Health will come and give them a series of health and safety regulations. For instance, that you can't get this business sleeping there, eating there, washing there, whole chat service. That needs to be controlled. We're in the process of doing that.
But some of this is already in the legislation, Minister.
We have already put it in the white paper.
Yeah.
By the way, what
but it's already in the existing legislation. I mean, the health and safety protocols, for instance, the Department of Health is mandated to do that.
Absolutely.
So there are certain failures by even the metros in checking if these puzzle shops are operating. So there's certain legislation that in itself has been existing for so long, and government has just failed to implement that.
That is why we call that two-day workshop. Because how did it come about? When I visit rural areas to give people IDs through our mobile trucks, traditional leaders used to call me to the royal house and complain about this issue. So when their house was being opened by the president in February 2023, I said, let's discuss this issue, because I also invited SALGA. I found that there is a lot of cross lines where people don't understand whose responsibility to do what. That's why then we called the two-day workshops and say, this is what the legislation is saying, this is our responsibility, this is where a gap exists, this is what we are going to do about the gaps, and that's how we actually came together in that way.
Yeah.
And we decided as Home Affairs that we'll also put this in the white paper, in as far as the spaza shop is owned by a foreign national. Remember, there are spaza shops that are owned by South Africans. They too have to be registered and follow the law.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I've got a question from, before that, someone else was asking about the permanent citizenship through marriage. How does that work? And they're asking if the new immigration laws deal with that, because that's often abused, where people come here and 2 weeks later they want to get married to a South African because they want citizenship.
By the way, let's correct. Citizenship is always permanent. Once you are given citizenship, it's forever. I'm sure she's confusing with permanent resident. Well, you are still a citizen of another country, but you are permanently residing here in South Africa, but you still hold citizenship of another country. Anyway, I was just making that correction. Yes, it's true, Clement. We were trying to be, I don't know what word to use, neighborly, well, neighborly, good country and all that. We said anybody who marries here in South Africa, in order to stay with their family, because we didn't want to separate families, must have a right to apply for permanent residency, which is the last step towards citizenship.
Mm.
True, it is being abused, left, right, and center. That's why we get every year more than 2,000 fraudulent marriages in Home Affairs. Some, a majority of them are marriages of convenience. Mm. To say, let me marry you, then I'll get South African documents and I'll give you money. So both of us will gain. You'll get money and I'll get the documents. And thereafter, after all that, in other words, it's a transactional marriage.
Mm.
Then they divorce the lady and they come to Home Affairs to complain. Home Affairs tried to solve it, but wrongly. They made a rule that if you are a foreign national, you marry a South African, and then you divorce before 5 years have elapsed, then we take back their documents.
Mm.
And the judges said, no, but you can't do that. You can't force people to stay together if they've decided that they need to part. You can't say stay for 5 years. So I also agree it was a wrong thing that Home Affairs tried to do. That's why we need to start rules from the beginning and look at exactly how do we stop that malady and misuse.
Mm.
There's another problem, which is a big problem, which is called the notarial contract, where you don't have to get married. You just go to a notary general, lawyers called notary general. They write a contract that you are staying together and you bring it to Home Affairs. Our immigration officers have got to investigate such activities and found that the guy is never there. He said we are staying together and is the base of this contract. They are never there. That is why, Clement, you have been chasing us about backlog on visas.
Mm.
And I've been at pains to explain most of the backlog is on spousal visas, because it's a backlog because there are spouses that are being created here which don't exist. And before we give that spousal visa, we need to ascertain that this spousal relationship indeed does exist. And we've seen a big rise in notarial contracts where people saying we're staying together, we don't want to get married, but we're staying together as partners and give us the documents and all that. We want to review that, and we want parliaments to review it in the new laws that we want to do in terms of the white paper.
Has this gotten you into trouble, some of these changes you're trying to make, apart from the death threats you're getting, which may or may not be linked to your work?
I don't know. Into trouble with who?
With different people who are unhappy about the changes you're making and how they're going to affect them.
Yeah, of course. This is a democracy. People were allowed. For instance, when we did the white paper, we issued it for public comments. It was supposed to end in the middle of January. Some people said, give us more time, and we gave that more time. And there are people who came in, majority have supported. There are those who, of course, were very angry and threatening fires of hell if the white paper gets passed. And we took it to cabinet, it got passed. So it is true that there are people who are upset because maybe we're taking away the hand that was laying the golden eggs for them.
Okay, Minister, thank you so much for making time for us. We'll bring you back because there's so much more to talk about, work visas, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you so much for making time for us this morning.
Thank you very much, Clement. Thank you.